Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Did you know that Wisconsin is home to the nation's only Master Cheesemakers program that provides innovative cheesemakers with continuing education opportunities? To learn more, visit wisconsincheese.com.
This week, it's the season finale of Meat and Three. We're following up our episode about youth with a look at age and how aging affects life on farms and in kitchens.
At the most basic level, we need people to grow food for a growing global population.
The question of planning for retirement or old age as a cook, it's almost one that doesn't exist bizarrely until it's too late.
We also have a story about a food that might be older than you think.
A recent archaeological finding might have CrossFitters everywhere reevaluating their diets.
Plus, a story about one of Atlanta's most historic and risque landmarks.
There are dancers that have been there 20 and 30 years.
Don't miss our season finale of Meat and Three, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Good evening, and welcome to
Fomen About It
on Heritage Radio Network.
I'm Rachel Jacobs.
And I'm Mary Izette, and we're your co-hosts for this weekly journey of all things fermented.
Hosted on Stitcher, iTunes, and heritageradionetwork.org.
Exactly. So, man, it's been a while.
It has been a while.
I think it's been at least 6 months since I have been in the studio. So, for those of you out there that have followed us in this journey, you will know that Chris and I, Chris Kuzmi, who's not here this evening, he has another gig. Chris Kuzmi and I and our partner opened a brewery in Long Island City last, at the very end of September. It's going really well. So we're just over 10 months old. Yeah, it's been crazy. So I have had a day job this entire time. And then working also at the brewery, the brewery is going well enough that, I got to quit my day job a month and a half ago.
Congrats. And what did you do immediately after you quit your day job?
I dyed my hair blue. So it's been awesome, but now finally Chris and I will have the time and energy to bring the podcast back. So we're going to have this show, and then we are relaunching in the fall season, which I believe starts that week of September 5th. So the next Monday will be our first show, and we're super excited. There's a lot of cool people doing all kinds of neat fermentations out there. I recently went to a new sake brewery here in Brooklyn, we've been meeting a lot of cool people. So
yeah, we met all sorts of mead makers. We met all sorts of interesting ferment makers at the fermentation festival back in February. We still have to talk to. And we're excited for what comes next in the world of fermentation.
Yes. So we will be back in September with all kinds of fermentation shows. But tonight we wanted to do a very special episode for it's Beers Without Beards Week. It's the first ever week-long celebration of women in beer in New York City. It is a project started by Grace White, who is here in the studio with us. Welcome, Grace.
Hey, Mary.
And then I'll go ahead and have everybody introduce themselves, and then we'll talk a little bit about Beers Without Beards. I'll have you guys just go around.
Hi, I'm Heather McReynolds. I'm the social media correspondent for Guinness.
Hi there, Anne Becerra, the beverage director, beer director at Treadwell Park.
Hello, I'm Jess Tabak. I'm the tasting room manager at Brooklyn Brewery.
Awesome. So I gathered up some... Oh, man, I don't know. I have so many favorite lady friends in the beer community, but you guys, most everyone in this room I've known for a really long time. So it's awesome to have everybody here. Anyway, so let's go back to Grace. So let's talk about what you do and how you came to be there, and then what inspired you to start Beers Without Beards.
Yeah, so I'm the marketing manager at Hop Culture. We're an online beer publication, and we also throw beer festivals all around the country. So this project really started because I was in a grad program at NYU. I was in a food studies grad program, and I pretty much centered all of my projects around craft beer just because I've worked in the craft beer industry and I love beer, and there's no current program in the U.S. where you can study craft beer culture. There's plenty of fermentation programs, but I kind of made my own way. And this Beers Without Beards Festival really started with an experiment. So if you guys will all indulge me for just a minute, close your eyes and think about the last beer that you drank. Maybe it was an IPA. Maybe you taste really nice notes of citrus, tangerine, grapefruit. Maybe it was a stout and you smell really great aromas of coffee or chocolate. Now, think about the person that brewed that beer. Are they big or tall, short or small? Are they blonde-haired, blue-eyed? Most importantly, did you envision a man with a beard or did you picture a woman? So 9 times out of 10, when I do that experiment with everyone, they have this stereotypical image in their head of a big man with like a burly beard, a plaid shirt, you know, brewer's boots, you know, it's the stereotypical image in craft beer. And that's the perception that we're trying to change with Beers Without Beards. So we started this festival based on that kind of thought experiment, if you will.
That image is almost what stopped me from becoming a brewer.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And I think it might have stopped a lot of other people, and that's why we're having this week-long festival, because we want to tangibly alter the scales. And I like to say we alter the scales with the ales capitalized in scales. We actually want to get more people, more women outside, coming into the community, drinking craft beer, working in the craft beer industry. And, you know, on the flip side, we also want everyone to just recognize the like wonderful achievements that like you guys have in craft beer and that everyone else has in craft beer.
Cool. So let's talk about what's going on this week.
Oh, boy, Mary. There's a lot going on this week. Well, this wonderful podcast episode is happening right now, and this is actually pretty much the kickoff to the week. So thank you very much for having all of us and putting this together and getting back in the studio, if you will. But tomorrow we have a event that we're doing with Pineapple. They're a women's food collaborative. They're all over the country. They do events in NYC, and they're putting on a panel called Brewing Change. So we're essentially looking at how brewing has helped different women business owners create change in the industry. On Wednesday, I'm really excited. We're doing a beer dinner and panel with the Smithsonian. So Teresa McCullough, she's the woman's first female brewing historian at the Smithsonian, and she's joining us for a panel talking about the role of women in beer history. So there's gonna be food from female-owned restaurant Taim. There's gonna be beer from Strong Rope Brewery. You get a cool tumbler. They just actually came in today to take home, and they look really, really sweet. Awesome. So it's gonna be a great event, and we still have a few tickets left to that. So
wait, where was that again? Could you say that one more time?
Where? It's at the mezzanine in the Fidei district, I think.
Yeah. I'm in.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you're interested in any of the events and you'd like to come and check them out, just go to www.hopculture.com/beardless. Wednesday, we'll also be doing a special edition of beer trivia over at Glorietta Baldi in Brooklyn with the Bearded Ladies. So there are two really great ladies who are doing, pretty much started this organization on their own, and they do beer trivia once a month over there. So we're doing a special edition with them. On Thursday, Mary's going to be joining us again for a panel at Fifth Hammer. We're talking about how women in the beer media space are helping to rewrite the beer industry and the business of beer. So how can we market beer more to women? How can we make, you know, spaces more amenable for women to drink beer, make them more comfortable? And that night we'll also be doing a bottle share over at Beer Karma with Kat Martinez from Lineup. Friday, we have a beer dinner with Stone. Unfortunately, those tickets are all sold out.
Good thing we got in before.
Yeah, good thing. If you bought your tickets, yay!
I bought my ticket.
Saturday is going to be the actual tasting festival. So we have over 20 breweries that are either owned by women, that have female brewers, that have women that are working in some capacity in the brewery, that'll be out at the Well in Brooklyn pouring. Tickets still available for that, though. So. And then Sunday, we are doing beer and yoga with Beer Fit Club. They're an organization started by Sofia Del Gigante. So it's a female-owned organization. We're going to do some namaste and some stretching and drinking over at Five Boroughs. And we're also doing an event with Anne. Yay. As well.
So she, excited.
Yeah. Do you want to actually talk a little bit more about your event and what we're going to be doing?
Sure. Yeah. So what we're doing, we're going to do kind of a basic intro to tasting beer. I feel like, well, at least feedback that I get a lot is people are interested, but they kind of don't know where to start and maybe don't even know the questions to ask. So we're going to make it really fun and break it down by ingredient. So we'll have, you know, malt-focused beers, hop-focused beers, fermentation-driven beers, along with some raw ingredients to taste and smell and break apart, and really just get back to basics and say, you know, give a general vocabulary for people who are looking to get into some trying new styles, using a variety of really amazing local options. So all the beers are from New York. As much as we can use beers brewed by women, we do our best, but like you said, I mean, it's... Unfortunately, there aren't that many options on the market, at least available in New York. But I think, again, focus on community, focus on, I guess, starting from the beginning and being in a comfortable space where you're okay to ask questions, you feel comfortable, mm-hmm. you're not going to feel like, is this a stupid question? There are no stupid questions. Like, we're all here to learn, and I'm really excited. It's going to be at St. Gambrinus in Brooklyn.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And then we actually brewed a beer for the week, which we'll be pouring at the Thursday night panel. It's called Savvy Seamare. It is a session IPA that we hop burst and dry hopped with El Dorado and Jarillo hops. And it's tasting really good.
Sounds delicious. I haven't had a chance to taste it yet.
I'll probably keg it tomorrow.
Time. Okay, it might
oh,
be the first
I smelled
time
those hops.
Thursday.
Yeah, they smelled good.
Yeah. So that was fun. That was my third or fourth brew, I guess, in the brewery. So,
Mary, I think you need another job. You're just not busy enough.
No, yeah.
Goodness gracious.
I feel I've been really mentally disorganized just because going from a corporate job to the brewery, I'm doing many different things. I have a very different schedule. So I'm finally feeling like a month and a half in, like, more mentally organized, and I kind of have a better grasp. But yeah, it's been kind of all over the place because I do everything from brew to keg to social media to events to... taking photos of dogs at sunset. So, yep. Anyway, so let's talk about, let's go around and talk about kind of what, where you guys are, how you got into beer, what like led you into beer, and what you're doing now.
So I'm starting, I guess.
Yep.
And I'm guessing you don't want like the hour long version. You probably want the condensed version. I will keep it brief. I started really falling in love with beer when I was in grad school, and I was managing a beer bar in my hometown, Gainesville, Florida, University of Florida. Woo, go get us! I fell in love with it there, and I loved beer. I loved learning about beer. I loved the culture around it. I loved the people that worked in it, and that's when I decided, like, I'm going to work in beer for the rest of my life. I didn't necessarily know, like, what capacity. I moved to Columbus, Georgia. I was managing a brew pub, and it was, you know, I was really helping to advance the culture there. Of beer education really was the thing that they were kind of lacking. But I wasn't, the brewer there wasn't really like giving his all. And I think he wasn't happy, and you could tell, and the beers weren't that great. And it really upset me because I saw the potential. So I asked my boss, the manager of the brew pub, like, let me try. I don't know anything about brewing beer right now, but like I care about it, so let's do it. And I trained with the brewer for a couple weeks, and then he quit, and so I took over brewing. And then I brewed for five and a half years. I moved up to Brooklyn. I met Mary Izette. Started brewing at a brewery in Brooklyn, and then managed it, and now I'm doing social media for Guinness.
And you went to ABG.
I did.
When did you go to ABG, actually? ABG is American Brewers Guild.
Yeah.
So it's a beer school here.
Yeah, it's based out of Vermont. But it was really great because I was already brewing at the time. And the thing about brewing that's interesting is that, like, you could teach anyone to make beer. It's a lot like cooking in that way. I'm not a chef. I'm not even a decent cook. But I know that if I had the right kind of person with me, they could teach me how to make certain meals and I could learn. But the thing that you really need to know to become a really great brewer is the science behind it and the whys and hows and making those adjustments as you need to be so you can really get the flavors that you want out of the ingredients. And so going to a school like ABG is really good for that. And it is a correspondence course, but it was great because I was working as a brewer at the time. And so this was what I was doing, nights and weekends kinds of thing, and learning the science behind it and all of that. But shout out to Brian Kobaki at Departed Souls and Zach Kinney at KCBC. And then your husband, Chris, I can never remember his last name.
It's just Chris.
It's actually printed on like every single one of his t-shirts. Kuzme also did ABG. It's a great program. Working now for Guinness and doing social media, it's been an interesting transition to go from doing such a process-driven thing where, you know, you have this end result of this beer that you share with people to now, like, the end result is, guys, did you see that Instagram post I did?
Got, like, 200 likes. 2,000.
So many likes on that. It is really interesting, though, because it's, you know, when a 259-year-old brewery says, we want to teach you how to do marketing and social media, we just want to, like, use the knowledge in your brain, and it's hard to turn that down. There's so much incredible history surrounding the brewery, and I'm very, very fortunate that I get to go to Dublin a couple times a year and work really closely with the archive team and see it firsthand. Like, you know, I've held bottles of beer in my hand that are like over 100 years old, and it they have the brew logs dating back to like the early 1800s, and I get to show that on social, and that I do get really, really excited about it. And, you know, it's not something that we'd be able to easily show people if it wasn't for social media. So it's interesting. It's a really interesting gig now. It's nice sharing that background and that culture with people. It's very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So social media. So it's interesting because I do most of Fifth Hammer's social media.
Rocking it.
And I've learned a lot. I never really knew. I mean, I had some, like, a personal Instagram and Facebook account and all that stuff, but I have had no training in this. I was too scared to use Instagram stories until I think May. I'm like, what are these stories? It makes no sense. Anyway, but I think actually social media is really important. I mean, it's important to us as a brewery. Like, I feel like a lot of people find us. Mm-hmm. We have a tasting room that's open 7 days a week. So a lot of people come to the tasting room because they've seen it on Instagram. Cool. And people engage. But I think Instagram can also be, or other forms of social media can be, a way to educate people as well. I mean, there's a lot of people interact about craft beer through social media.
Definitely. And I think that was one of the hardest things when I first started. It was like, all right, I'm going to break down what's the enzymatic activity that's going on in the mash. And it's like, no, that's a little too advanced for people who are scrolling through Instagram for the most part. I'm sure all of your lovely listeners are very well versed on what's going on inside a mash tun. But your average beer lover on Instagram, they're not ready for that. So it was hard to back it up a little bit. And I think there was one time I needed to explain like what an ester was. And I was like, oh, I didn't know I was at that level. You know, okay, yeah, let me break down what an ester is. Cool, I can do this. But yeah, I think it is a great way to get people excited on kind of a high level. And I like to use the Instagram stories to get a little bit more nerdy. Like, hey, you know, here's this post about this beer. It's got this. If you want to learn more about it or deep dive into it, like, check out the Instagram story. And you can break it down into a little story-like object that, you know, people can dig into. But, you know, I think, too, it's also really important because, you know, you're showing the actual people too. If you step back and consider like your brewery, you're showing the people who work at your brewery. And, you know, when it's someone like you who's in front of the camera, you know, you're a woman. And so it's another way that women can show that, you know, we're also here.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think it's cool because I've been not doing as much, but I think it's a good way to also show a lot. Like, until we opened this brewery and I had been homebrewing and, you know, been in breweries a lot, but there's things that happen behind the scenes to make a beer that like no one ever sees or thinks about.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's cool too, because it can be, again, be a little bit more be fun and pretty, but also educational.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to take a very brief break and we will be right back with talking to Anne the men about it.
Thank you.
Today's program was brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. What do you think of when you hear Wisconsin cheese? For me, I think cheese curds. Delicious, fresh, and squeaky cheese curds. Or deep-fried cheese curds. Cheese curds literally any way, anytime, any place. I think about Andy Hatch and Uplands Cheese, the farmstead cheese company behind Pleasant Ridge Reserve. I think of delicious stinky Limburger and its long storied history. I think of Dunbarton Blue, made by master cheesemaker Chris Raleigh. I think of Ross Grand Cru Sirchois, which was named 2016's World Championship Cheese, and Sartori's Black Pepper Bellavitano, the 2017 U.S. Championship Cheese. Wisconsin produces the world's best cheese, with lush grasslands and a glacial water supply that produce the very best milk. Fourth-generation cheesemakers combine old-world tradition with new ideas and the highest standards to make innovative cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country. To learn more, visit wisconsincheese.com.
Welcome back to Femen About It on Heritage Radio Network. So I do have to say something about, so I brought a couple of crowlers of our beers. So I poured the Summer Sour Blackberry, and now I'm just we just made a Brut IPA.
I'm going to make the claim that, like, maybe this is the first Brut IPA on the East Coast.
It might be, yeah. I've seen them on the West. Where are they on the East Coast?
I think somebody in Pennsylvania did it. It might be the first one in New York City, though.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
We can say that, then.
Yeah.
Can we say it's the first one in New York City brewed by a woman?
Oh!
I didn't brew this one, though. I only helped with the recipe formulation.
We could technically say it might be any of those things.
Yeah. But I did! I know! But I did keg it! I did keg it, actually.
I like the first brewed IPA in New York City, though.
Yeah. Kegged by a woman. How about that?
Okay.
Because I can't get all by myself.
I think we're getting very specific now, but cool. Okay.
Sorry, I'm going to interrupt for a second. Just on that note, though, like, brewing is, like, very all-encompassing. I mean, just because you helped write the recipe,
true,
that's part of the whole brewing process. There's right, someone that actually, like, mills the grain, then does the mashing, and then someone cellars it and kegs it. That's all part of the process. And even coming up with the label and the name. So it's not just like, oh, I'm like mashing out right now. Like,
yeah,
that's not brewing to me. That's
honestly, to be honest, I think cellar work is like one of the most important parts of the process. Like, yeah, brewing is good, but like you can really mess up a beer on the cold side.
True. That's what Beers Without Beers, we've always said that our main goal is to empower the role of all women in craft beer. So we're really encompassing that to mean all the women that are brewing, that are owning breweries, that are working in the front of house, doing marketing, social media, writing about beer. Podcasting about beer, so there's many ways for women drinking beer, so many ways for women to get involved. It's a really great point that you brought up, Jess.
Sure.
We're small enough that there's three of us that do all of that stuff at this point, but we don't have a cold. Some breweries do have, like, they're kind of hot side the brewery, and cellar work, they have two different crews for that. Mm-hmm. So if you brew, you're only on the hot side. If you cellar, you're only on the cellar side. But it varies brewer, right, brewer. But anyway.
You wear many hats on top of that blue hair.
Yes. So, Anne, tell us about your background and what you do.
So, I basically fell in love with Belgian beer originally. The flavors were just outstanding, and I kind of found that I could get the greatest beer on the planet for what was maybe the cheapest bottle of wine, out there. And I could give you the background. I was working, I quit my job, quit life, traveled cross country, and fell in love with all these great beers across from, East Coast all the way to California. And when I came back into New York, I was setting up interviews to go back to real work. And it's like, after you've seen Yellowstone, it's very difficult to come back and sit in office, right? So I kind of made a deal. I'll work in beer for 3 months just to get as much knowledge as I can, and then I'll go back to work. And within the week, I was like, this is insane. Like, so much exists now that I had no idea about. No idea. Obviously, if you're not seeking it out, you're not going to find ads. When's the last time you saw an Orval ad? You know what I mean? Or something like, it's just this wonderful little insular world. But I thought, like, if this is new to me, there's so many people out there that it's got to be the same way for them. So that was when I was working at the Ginger Man on 36th Street. I was there for a few years. It was amazing. But what was really fun was I was just soaking it all in, and I didn't really have an end goal. It was like I just wrote tasting notes. I still have my original little book that I'm old-fashioned. I write with a pen and paper, but I wrote tasting notes on every single thing I tasted, alphabetical order, and just kind of kept these great logs. And everyone said, well, what do you want to do? I don't get it. Do you want to own a bar? Do you want to have a brewery? I'm like, I don't know, but I have access to this information, and I'd be a fool to let it go just out the window. So I basically just kind of dived in and decided to do whatever the day brought, you know? So initially I started writing. I'm not a journalist. I'm not like a trained journalist. But what happened was I was going to visit breweries and, you know, you'd meet all these wonderful people coming in and out of the bar. And they're like, whenever you're in Pennsylvania, you know, hit us up. Or whenever you're here, come visit. I'm like, sure, let's do it. So I'd go visit and just find such wonderful things to say about it. I mean, it was a whole experience. You know, you're seeing not just the beer in the glass, but what they're giving back to their community, who they're employing, their relationships with farmers and their, you know, commitment to agriculture and sustainability. And it was like, oh my God, you know, we can have this great, affordable luxury with an incredible story behind it. That's good for the country. That's good for these towns. It's good for just community, right? So that was really fun. And I would come back and tell my stories to my regulars and tell the stories to the employees and be like, this place is amazing. You got to see what Victory is doing for the Headwater Fund and blah, blah, or whatever. And so I figured, listen, if I'm going to make it easier for myself to sell some of these esoteric styles and these weird things that are kind of a hard sell, if I maybe start writing about it or have a platform that people can find out about them, they'll come in asking for it. So when I met Ray Daniels, who started the Cicerone organization really early on, and he just told me about the program, I was like, well, great. Put a date on the calendar that I can study for. And I passed, and it was great because it ended up being like the first woman in New York City. That's not something that I say very often, believe it or not, but it is certainly, I've had a real crash course in Media 101 over the last couple of years of what strikes a chord with certain writers. And so luckily that's kind of the angle that a lot of people pick up on. And it's funny, I'll sit with someone for 2 hours talking about every subject you can imagine and the headline, New York City's first female. And it's like, that was like 7 years ago, but okay. But at the same time, I get it. And to be quite honest, in the beginning, and I've been so fortunate in the press, with media write-ups, with opportunities. I mean, I can't even, I'm like pinching myself. But at the same time, I used to really shy away from it because I was like, I don't need you to point out the fact that I'm a woman. I mean, I'm doing things that a lot of men haven't done, and I'm exploring different subjects. And it wasn't until the, you know, election wrapping up where it was like, oh my God, is this what it's like? I feel like I'm sometimes in a bubble in New York City, and it's always, what's it like to be a woman in the male-dominated industry and blah, blah, blah. And I kind of want to say, listen, I'm a buyer in New York City. So even people that might be a little rough around the edges or maybe have some thoughts about gender equality are not going to come in and show it to me because they're trying to sell their beer. Mm-hmm. So I know for a fact that I don't see the sides firsthand that a lot of people see. So I kind of switch gears, and it's like, you know what, if that's what it takes to get in and if people want to say the first female this or say this or that and use that as a headline, I'm okay with it because it is an entryway into like a bigger story. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, Mary and I have had tons and tons of conversations about this. It's hard. I mean, when I was brewing, it's something that, like, no, you don't want it to be a selling point because at the end of the day, I wanted my beers to be sold in their own merit.
Yeah.
They weren't lady beers. They weren't beers for ladies. They were beers for people, and I wanted them to be judged against other beers that were also made for people. But I did struggle with that, too, because, I also want to show other women that, yeah, these are jobs you can do. Because, like I mentioned when you were talking earlier, Grace, about, you know, you probably picture a big bearded dude. Like, when I was managing a bar, never in a million years did I ever consider brewing, because it's like, oh yeah, you have to be a lumberjack. Like, I'm sure. Like, I don't have the physique for that. I'm a small 5'0" woman. Like, that's totally what I thought. I psyched myself out of it, and then I just got so frustrated that I asked. Like, so yes, we do need to show other women that these are things you can do, but it does have to be done the right way, and we do need to have the right media people. Like, I was really fortunate. Speaking of the bearded ladies. Meredith Heil did a really great write-up on me when I was brewing a couple years ago, and I totally felt really comfortable with her doing it, obviously, because I knew that
the focus of the story would not be the fact that, you know, I had boobs. The focus of the story would be like, this is what it's like to brew beer in New York City. So, yes, I agree. Mm-hmm. Like, that's something we need to talk about more. Like, the media portrayal of women in the beer industry.
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of switched gears because now it's like, why? I'm proud to be a woman. I don't care. I drink differently. Too bad. And I think that's something that, you know, in the beginning, and I think a lot of what I see is a lot of friends come into the industry and they feel like they have to keep up and they're there and they're drinking 6, 7, 8, 9 beers a day. I don't want to drink 6, 7, 8, 9 beers a day. It's not because I'm a woman, it's because I'm me. You know, I have my way of doing things. I enjoy a beautiful glass. I like a nice setting. I like, it's just, that's my personality. Yeah. It's fine. And I can find an amazing beer to do that. I love, I'm just, that's how I look at things. And I don't feel like I need to apologize for the way I drink or the way I talk about things. And so more now I've realized like a good focus has been introducing new audiences to beer. And, you know, going on the Rachel Ray show, for example, that was really fun because, you know, it was like they wanted to have some basic style knowledge of how to recognize styles. And they asked, please bring on one macro version and one craft version that's fairly, and I, you know, I chose things that were easy to see and recognize and understand. And, of course, I will say, big piece of advice, don't read the comments. Oh, my God. You're never going to, I mean, why would they choose that? I can't believe it. It's like, listen. I'm not talking to someone who knows everything under the sun. I'm talking to someone who may have never even knows that a wit beer or an IPA exists.
Exactly. Yeah.
And if that commenter, when they get invited on Rachel, yeah. they can bring kind of beer that so, they want
to
bring.
I want to go back to Heather's point for a second, because I think the best question that a reporter ever asked me about Beers Without Beer is I did that thought experiment with him.
Yeah.
And he was like, okay, so if the stereotypical picture of a man in beer is someone with a beard and a plaid shirt and, you know, boots and everything, what is the image of a woman? And I was like, that's a really, really good question. And I said, you know, you might, honestly, to me, it's just a sign of strength, because women brewing in beer, it's a very physical job. And it's very like, you know, there are things that...
It can be. It depends on what side of the process you're on and how big your system is. Can be.
And actually, I mean, I think this would be an interesting question to ask the group. Like, what would your, you know, image of a woman brewing beer? Because I honestly, he threw me for a loop and I said, I had to think about it. And I just thought about, we have a mascot for Beers Without Beers and it's a woman. She's holding two kegs and, you know, it's a very powerful image. So, you know, to me, I think a woman who undertakes brewing or getting involved in working in beer is very strong, whether that's, you know, inside, outside, whatever. So I'd love to put this to all you guys, what you think.
Does she wear pink boots?
I mean, at least steel-toed boots. Gotta have steel toes.
It's just something, I just don't think about that. I know that sounds awful.
I just think about it either. When he asked me that question, I was just like, wow,
I don't brew. And everyone says, like, do you brew? I'm like, I don't. Like, there's a lot, I feel like I'm more of a translator for people who are just, you know, it's like, where do I start? What's out there? And I can translate. I mean, I brew for fun. I'll certainly go out and do collabs here and then and just make it for fun. But, you know, it's not, I don't even homebrew. But it doesn't mean, but I cook and I shop and I, you know, eat out and I dine out and I drink and there's all these things, I host parties. I mean, there's so many different elements to it. And when I talk about, you know, a lot of people think it's either a brewer or you're a rep, in the sales division. It's like, think about the scientists and the chemists and the logistical coordinators and the graphic designers and, you know, the servers and bartenders and managers and all of these things that go into it. It's fun.
I had to remind a friend the other day about, like, oh yeah, and don't forget about like the QA team and the, like that side. Yeah. Like, those guys work hard.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think we all have to keep it very, you know, make sure that not us in this room, obviously we know that, but it's not insular. Like, I think that's something that I found too, where it's even I'll walk into a bar and people don't, if you don't know, like, you wouldn't look at me and be like, she knows a lot about beer, and that's fine because of these perceptions, but at the same time, if I have a question about a beer, please don't make me feel like I'm the dumbest person in the room. And I think a lot of people, not just male or female, are kind of want it to be their thing, and I get it. Like, it's a fun hobby to have, and you like having your community. But at the same time, we're not going to sustain this industry that's going up against big beer and all. I mean, you know, we want people to be welcomed and to feel comfortable and to feel excited and to try new things. And I think the more open-minded we are and the more welcoming we all are as a community, it's just going to help.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And speaking of all different roles,
tell us
what you do, Jess.
I have bounced around a little bit, but that's just my total M.A. M.O. But actually that I was just thinking about, though, because it's interesting because brewing is such like super fascinating to everyone. And like right now we're in this really big boom with it, and it's still like very mysterious. You're like, oh, wait, really? You can brew beer? It's like, yeah, this has been happening for like thousands of years. But we are just living in this time where there is a lot more of a focus on it. And, you know, growing marijuana is going to be that next wave, especially with how it's going to be legal everywhere. Just how with beer was with prohibition, it was not legal everywhere. True. So there's going to be another wave in a different industry. And right now we're just living in one of those very exciting moments that we've all been part of it. And with it being 2018, with it being another wave of being progressive and forward facing with women, like just back in the 70s, we are just like contributing to it. So I think it's just pretty cool to be a part of it, like of this mysterious like industry. But in the, all of it, it's no different than someone owning like a copying machine, like company. You know, someone has to like actually make the copying machines. It's basically the same thing, but no one cares.
Right.
So just if.
They don't have the artisanal aesthetic around it.
You can't drink a coffee machine.
Handmade. Well, and honestly, that's the great thing about beer. I think that's a great thing at the end of the day. Like, it is a thing that brings people together, and they celebrate things over it. And
you can't download it.
Yes, and you know, if you're sitting at a bar and there's someone that's attractive, like it helps you like start conversations with people, like. We joke around calling it a social lubricant, but it really is.
I've had some of my best conversations just over sharing a beer, you know.
And exactly.
I've met some like great friends over sharing beer, especially since I moved to New York. I used to sell beer in Chicago, and I was never ostracized for being a woman or for, you know, being clean shaven and not having a beard. But but everyone I ran into, all the reps, they all had beards, and it was like there just wasn't that community. I didn't find that community until I actually moved here to New York. And
glad you found it.
Yeah, glad I found all you.
Yay.
Guys.
Well, our country was founded in the pub. I mean, our national anthem is a beer song. It's a beer drinking song. Modern medicine is founded because we were studying beer. I mean, like, you can really go into such depth about why and how, like, the Mayflower stopped because they needed to be in beer. I mean, like, seriously, and that's the kind of thing where I think I'll do a lot of beer dinners at, you know, resorts and hotels and really talking to, like, wine drinkers. And a lot of times it's their first beer dinner ever. And what I'll get is, oh, my God, I had no idea. It was so connected. This doesn't even taste like beer. And to me, you're like, well, it does, but it's... You know,
that's my favorite. This is a taste like beer.
I love it. This is the first I'm actually drinking.
You have no idea.
More. You see people taking pictures of the labels, and it's like they just didn't know it existed. And so, you know, going out there and getting in the media and going out and doing this, it's not something that I'm like, I want to be famous. I don't. Like, who even knows my last name? Anne likes beer, right? But really, it's more just getting that message out because I think it's an industry that needs or that warrants respect. And that warrants, and I think when I first started, it was funny. I'd bring, like, great beers to a dinner or to a party, and it's like, oh, that's so cute. We're going to play beer pong later. I'm like, what? Dude, you know, because we have wine at the table, and we're going to drink that later when we're playing games. And it's like, now those same people are calling and saying, here's the beer list where I am. What do you recommend? What should I drink? And it's just changing that perception and changing kind of what people expect it to be, whether it's the culture or it's just the beer or it's just what you shop for when you're making dinner. Just knowing that it's an option that's worth a shot and also worth respect, because like you said, you guys know a lot goes into this. A lot of love goes into it.
So I want to ask you what you're doing currently.
What are you doing, Jess?
I'm the one that works at Brooklyn Brewery.
Sorry.
So yeah, I've been with Brooklyn, well, I was part-time for a handful of years, and then I became full-time about a year and a half ago, and it's just night and day being, you know, part-time, full-time with the 11th largest craft brewery in the States. It's very exciting. It's been a learning process the entire way. I mean, my entire, like, beer career has been that way. But essentially, what's interesting with Brooklyn Brewery is that I've been here in New York for 10 years now, and basically when I moved here, it was Six Point. It was Kelso. and Brooklyn Brewery. Those were the three breweries that really were the crap breweries. Mm-hmm. And since then, what are we up to, like 40 crap breweries in the city?
We're pretty close to that.
It's amazing. Yeah, it's awesome.
I've almost been here 6 years now, and I think when I moved here 6 years ago, I think there was like 10.
Yeah.
And like I think I was at this point in my mind, there's no way there's going to be anywhere craft breweries in the country. It's amazing. But it's also amazing, like you probably know too, like be around this and see this and witness it and like meet these guys and gals and see what they're doing and watch them, you know, have this seed of an idea and then take it and then grow a beautiful big brewery. It's great. It's so cool.
I mean, it's very exciting and everyone's like super like thrilled just to be in it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, some have like prospered a little bit more than others. Some are still like on the like peripheral, but you wouldn't be surprised if to see like some brewery you haven't thought about for a really long time. They're like, oh yeah, they're still turning out the beer. You just don't see them as much, but they're still in it. But with Brooklyn right now, it's very interesting being part of a brand that has a really literally like worldwide identity, as you would know with Guinness. And yeah, it's very cool. And it's like been around for 30 years. It's not like one of the, you know, it's been around since the second wave and kind of endured. It has endured. So it's interesting to how to keep up and like stay fresh. Especially with social media, we have a really strong social media platform, and also even just going into like the whole branding. It's because once you get to a certain point, it's not just like how good your liquid is, making sure you have good liquid. It's making sure that your liquid gets in front of people, mm-hmm. and what are those tactics?
And you get your message out, you get the story out. Yeah, definitely.
And it's been fun and learning experience.
And what do you do? What's your day to day kind of?
So basically, I make sure that. Well, I'm the tasting room manager of we have like a 4,000 square foot tasting room. And we have a lot of things that go through there. and especially with it being Brooklyn Brewery, and we're in over like 33 countries at this point. And over
I can imagine that you hear like 7 different languages at any given time in your tap room.
Mostly Portuguese, actually.
Okay.
We hear a lot of Portuguese.
Okay.
And because most of the other people, we get a lot of people from Sweden and Norway, and they're fine with their English. So you can always like tell the blonde, beautiful, like tall, like people in the room. They're like, yeah, there are Swedes. But it's very interesting just because literally people, when they're on their vacations, they're like, oh, Brooklyn Brewery is like one of my to-do lists. It's like the Empire State Building.
It's a destination.
And that's when I see like a lot of people in the industry that have been in the industry for a long time. I'm just like, who's in town visiting you? You know?
Yeah.
because it's just like one of the staples, essentially. And it's great because I think that was one of not necessarily the initial goals of the brewery's founding. You know, they're like, let's just brew some good beer. Yeah. Like, let's just bring it out there. But just over time, just with the right approach, it has become that way.
And you guys just got this new tap room because you just renovated.
We did a big renovation.
How is that going for you? It's been a month or two now, right?
Yes. And it's a lot more user-friendly.
Cool.
We actually have a bar you can go and sit at and hang out.
Cool.
And you can just pay cash at the bar.
Cool. Because
before we had these awesome wooden tokens.
You know, prehistoric beer laws.
I like the tokens, though. I'm old fashioned. I liked the tokens, but that's okay.
So I'm kind of wondering, because you guys, a couple of you have touched on how social media might be kind of the next way to get more people, especially women, involved with drinking craft beer. I'm just wondering, this has always been a question on my mind, you know, what is the best way to reach women who are looking to get into the craft beer space? Is it with like a festival like Beers Without Beards? Is it through social media? You know, what do you guys think?
I think if there was a short answer, we would have done it already, Grace.
Shoot, I thought this was an easy black and white answer.
But I think those are all important. I think it's really cool to have. I mean, I know there's another. There's at least one or two other festivals for wet.
Yeah, there's Femme Ale Fest in South Florida, and there's Dames and Dregs in, I think it's Georgia.
I think what Anne was saying, like just going around and putting those beers in front of people. It's that. I when I worked at the bar back a million years ago, like that was one of my most favorite things was I really don't know what I want. I'm not a big beer drinker. And then like, yeah, you come back with some Belgian beer and it's like, oh my God, did not realize beer could taste like this. Or like, I think it starts there. It starts with meeting the right beer people, going to the right beer bars, like not having servers who are
You have to remember, jerks. We're able to get to beer bars. Not everyone is. So, yeah, I mean, for me, it's not even, it's about just having language that people understand. And I think that's, for that's me, that's what, I mean, we all have different strengths. I think that's, and the short answer is everyone has different strengths, so you use what you've got, right? Yeah. So if you have an audience that's talking to this type of person, excellent. If you're able to be in a tap room and put it directly in front of them, fantastic. If you can write a great article that kind of gets sent around the world, mm-hmm. amazing. Mm-hmm. Go on a show, perfect. But whatever that is, I think, you know, for me, I've found that it's this weird balance between getting the information out and getting accurate information, but also doing it in a way that's not intimidating and using language that people want to hear right off the bat. And so sometimes I'll see, like, you know, the headlines. I mean, we're in a clickbait society at this point. It really is. I mean, you see that, you got 1 second to make that thing stand out. And so you use the flashiest titles a lot of times, and that's okay. It happens, right? But at the same time, I've gotten a lot of flack for, like, saying something really simple. And I'm like, but I'm not talking to you. You know what I mean? Like, I understand that you know the ins and outs of brewing, and we can discuss alpha acids and pH. You know, that's not who I'm talking to. I'm introducing this mm-hmm. to a new audience. And so I think if we could all just be more open-minded and let each, whoever's doing their part, do their part.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, who knows what kind of audience dirty. Is well
yeah.
gained.
Yeah,
but I think, and we'll talk about this more on Thursday, but even since we've opened this tasting room, I mean, our tasting room, like, the audience is, it's got to be close to half-half, ladies and guys.
And children and get, puppies.
Sure. Yeah, and we get a lot of a birthday party.
Like, if I can boast for you for a second, Fifth Hammer's a really great third space. Like, like, you come, you hang out. It's a really great neighborhood spot. It's dogs, and it's kids, and it's older people, and it's younger people, and it's
lots of
people who know a lot about beer, and people who don't know a lot about beer, people who come and I'm just going to just have the wine, please, and people who are like, it's, you've created a great community space.
Yeah. I do have a question.
Maybe we need more of those.
Yeah.
So, yeah, totally hung out at Fifth Hammer. It is a good vibe, like, good time. It's people just, like, you could tell they're relaxed and they're comfortable, so good job on that. but so I am curious, though, because you do have red. You have a red and white wine available,
and a rosé.
Right? And a rosé.
And a cider.
So how does it, do you feel, though, that people, like, how does that go with your customers? So people, are the majority of them that go in there, are they really open to, like, try some things out? And they're like, okay, you know, how was that experience?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, really, we have the wine. So it's all New York State farm wine. And a New York State, a cider made in Queens, actually. But I found when we first opened that if people came in couples or groups and one person did not drink beer, and it's not always, you know, it could be either gender. I mean, across the board.
Sure.
That, you know, the people that did want to come and drink beer would not stay as long. So that's mostly why we got wine. But so that we have groups, and, like, we have a lot of birthday parties. We have bachelor parties, bachelorette parties, kids' birthday parties, dog birthday parties, anniversary parties, whatever, you name it. And so, you know, that's a lot of group. Like, a lot of people come to our tasting room in groups. And if there's one person that doesn't drink beer, then we have, you know, it's really nice to have something for those people.
But weren't you telling me, though, that, like, a lot of your, like, really cool fruited sours were helping to get...
I added a rosé at the beginning of the summer. And it's actually a cool story, but it's made on Long Island by a guy that was a firefighter, a 9/11 survivor. Anyway, super cool guy, so we carry his rosé. So I added this rosé, and, oh, my God, we sold the shit out of that rosé, like...
Cool.
This summer, but as soon as we
I hear rosé's hot right now.
Yeah, as soon as we have this blackberry summer sour, and it is purple, like it's pink purple. As soon as that came out, our rosé sales immediately dropped. Wow. I know, it's crazy, right? So anyway, I think
because people
interesting.
Trust you at this point. If they're coming there, and you're not trying
they
to
want,
beat them over the head with something new, they can kind of ease their way in. Now they trust you,
well,
and they'll listen to you.
And they're, you know, we're serving that blackberry summer sour in a teku. It's a beautiful color. Uh-huh. It looks good. And people are like, oh, what's that? I want to taste that.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, it's pretty fascinating, I think. And it's also been interesting because I bartend sometimes as well to even have people like, we just ran out of, we had a Belgian wit on and we just ran out of it. And so people would come in and say, hey, I like white beer. What do you have? It's like that. I'm like, well, we don't have any. We just, you know, ran out. We don't have one right now, but we have this Saison or something else. And it is surprising what people will drink.
I think that's part of the key, like, to getting more people to be beer drinking. No offense to our New York State cider and wine producers, but, you know, talking about beer right now. But, like, you know,
not a lot of people generally overall in this country right now are drinking a lot of beer. So, like, if there is a way to get them more excited about beer, like, oh, I didn't know beer could be that color. And, yeah. I didn't know beer could look like that.
And to Anne's point, I think that the environment is a big, big part of why women may or may not, you know, go to a bar to drink beer. Because if they don't feel welcome or, you know, if they don't feel like it's a community there, and if they feel like it's just not a welcoming space, you know, they're probably less likely to try something new. And at a place like Fifth Hammer, where it's just like super welcoming and there's a great community there, and there's other spots like that in the city, you know, you're much more likely as a woman to get involved with drinking craft beer.
I'd say, I mean, we have a lot of breweries in the city that are very, you know, friendly and comfortable and everything. Yeah. But that is true. I will have to say, like, I still see, you know, some of these breweries that are that have either very sexist beer names or imagery. I see,
I'm
you know.
Over it. I used to be seriously, at this point, you grow up. Give me a break.
I know. Yeah, but it's amazing. Like, I've definitely have seen people's Instagram, like a friend of ours who travels, Chris O'Leary travels, and he had taken a photo of a brewery that he walked into, and like, there were some really offensive beer names and stuff. And you know, like, I would never walk. I would, and I think actually he did walk in and walk straight back out. But like, why would you have that this day? Anyway, well, so I think, you know, that is important. If you're opening a brewery or a bar, like, think about,
they don't know how else to sell their beer.
No, don't. Leave it there and let us see your true colors. Do what you got to do. We'll figure it out for ourselves.
Yeah. Well, it's just, it's unfortunately the tactic they've chosen to sell their beers. Yeah. It's just like a woman, like, with her breasts just hanging out, holding a bottle of beer, like, right by it. It's like the breasts, like, first distract you, and they're like, oh, what's she actually have in her hand right now? It's the same tactic. Right.
I mean, well, it's Belgian triple that you'd never drink right out of the bottle. Got it.
Yeah, it's just men have, like, 150-year... This is what I like to say. Men have a 150-year head start on marketing beer, i.e., like, Budweiser and Miller having these scantily clad women to sell their beer. But let's not forget that women are the OG brewers. Yeah. We were the first ones to brew beer, and we've been doing it since 4000 BC. So that's what I say to that.
Oh, I can't wait to hear this project. I'm working on it. I can't yet because it's not ready for a couple weeks.
All of you will be invited to the unveiling. It's really, really wonderful. Straight to that point. So excited.
And if you are in New York City or the New York City area, please check out Beers Without Beards Week. There's all, you know, as we talked about earlier, there's all kinds of cool events going on, and it culminates in a big festival on Saturday. So I hope to see many of you out there. And then, as I mentioned, Foment About It will be back with a weekly show in the fall, in September.
Yeah. Give yourselves a chance to plug your social media.
Yes.
Yes, I'm actually going to plug the website again where you can buy tickets because we still have some left and we'd love to see as many people out there as possible. So if you're interested in any of the events that we talked about, the Big Tasting Festival or any of the events during the week, go to www.hopculture.com/beardless.
Hilarious. You can find me talking about Guinness stories on Instagram and Twitter at GuinnessUS.
At Anne Likes Beer, Anne with an E. And speaking of women in beer, I just have to mention that next Tuesday at Treadwell Park at our Uptown location on 62nd and 1st, we're actually launching, we're doing the U.S. launch of Duchess Cherry. So the new Duchess de Bourgogne Flemish Red with sour cherries. And we have some really great traditional Flemish carbonade and some great Belgian chocolate cookies and some good, like, cuisine à la bière to go with these lovely things. I think everyone will be there around 6, but we'll be running it all day. So really pumped about it.
Well, I personally don't run Brooklyn Brewery's social media. But you can find us at Brooklyn Brewery and pretty much any platform, hashtag or whatever. My own personal IG, I'm not really much in the whole social media, but I am on Instagram at See, this is how much I don't use it. New York City.
New York City.
But our person who does social media, he's really witty, and he's always a good laugh, so.
Yeah.
And you can find us at Foment About It on Instagram and on Twitter, or fomentaboutit@gmail.com.
Yes. And we'll be Instagramming more. We're going to get everything going again. I'm so excited, Rachel.
Oh, yeah, we also have a Facebook page that you should like and ask us questions, and we can read some questions on the air.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for listening, and we will be back in September. Foment About It.
Foment About It.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola El Whaley, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries, like why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode. Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.